Real life.
Superpowers.
When I look through every single step in my career and even in my life in general, whenever I took a leap of faith and I threw myself into deep water, these were the times where I had the biggest growth spurts in my career, the biggest lessons that I learned, the times where I usually flourished the most. It's when I felt that my back is against the wall and I'm in deep water and the only thing I have to do is to paddle the shit out of it or just fall apart.
Hey everyone, welcome to Real Life Superpowers. I'm Noah Eshet, co-hosting here with Vanen Menipaz. Our guest today is Yossi Barishev, one of the most watched founders in cybersecurity today. He spent years leading security operations and innovation at companies like Signia and Fireblocks. And if Fireblocks rings a bell, it might be because we previously hosted one of its co-founders, Idan Ofrat, back in episode 64. Definitely worth checking out if you haven't already. Yossi's career spans elite cyber experience, Fortune 500 advisory work, and now a new stealth mode venture focused on reimagining identity and trust in the age of AI. He's been recognized by Business Insider, New York Tech Media, and Newsblaze as one of the leaders shaping the future of cybersecurity. Let's dive in.
Real life.
Superpowers. Superpowers.
Yossi, welcome to Real Life Superpowers.
Hey, Yossi.
Hey, how's it going? Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, what's keeping you up these days?
Oh gosh, everything. It's quite wild right now. Yeah.
Start somewhere. What are you busy with?
Wow. So I embarked on a startup journey quite recently. We're still in stealth mode, so I can't tell too much, unfortunately, but. Oh my God, it's the wildest ride I've been on, definitely, in my life at least.
How do you strike a balance between being in stealth and yet gaining media attention? Because you are being titled as a rising star in cybersecurity. So how does that go?
That's a great question. I think that as with any startup and as with any entrepreneur, there's really two entities to it. There's the startup itself and the brand around it, and then there's the entrepreneur and the brand around him. And I think that these are two animals that kind of live side by side and coexist in some sense, because especially in the early days of a startup, a lot of the credibility that you bring to the table as a business comes from the founders themselves. And so it's really important for me to make sure that my customers, my prospects, whoever I engage with, is aware of who I am as a person, is aware of my past, is aware of what I bring to the table from a value perspective. And that really helps a lot, at least in the initial conversations, to set the stage and add an additional layer of credibility to the conversation.
So let's talk about what you do bring to the table and actually that background that you've mentioned, because this is the first time that you're building something of your own, right?
Yep, that's true.
So what happened before?
So, wow, how did I start? Well, I was born. I'm joking. I think that I have a bit of an unusual journey as an entrepreneur compared to most Israeli startup founders, mainly because I did not really come from this classic, typical background. I was born in the periphery. I didn't serve in the right unit, didn't study in the right school. And I also did not come from this traditional, unit 80-200 cyber offensive type background. My co-founder actually did, but I didn't. And I spent most of my career running security teams. That's what I was doing. I was on the buyer's end, and I spent over a decade basically solving security for enterprises. And basically kind of, grew through the ranks until I got to the position where everything just clicked and connected, and I found an opportunity to embark on this journey. And yeah, the rest was history, I guess.
And when you say that you found an opportunity, do you mean that you identified a need being on the ground?
Absolutely. I think that specifically in my journey, it was really the culmination of my entire career. And I really tried to solve a problem that is close to heart, and I personally dealt with in most of the positions that I had during my career. So for me, it was very natural to just embark on solving the particular challenge I'm dealing with. So yeah, that one side of it was, of course, the opportunity of, yes, there is a vacuum in the industry and it can be filled by what we're building right now. But aside from it, it was also the opportunity from a market perspective. It was this opportunity from the perspective of where my career stood at that point in time. And I think that the combination of all of these together really allowed me to, you know, go out and start this journey.
And what gave you the courage? Because, you know, your whole life you were working, for someone else. And even if you do identify an opportunity, and I know now you're speaking of it as in the context of the market and the vacuum and all of that. But there were probably a lot of things that you didn't know when you first sensed there's an opportunity here. So what actions did you start to take before you took the leap?
Well, first off, I have to say, and I'm sure that most aspiring entrepreneurs and existing ones alike can agree with me. You never know, and you never know everything. And I think that for me, this journey of bringing myself to a point where I could make that decision, it wasn't like a binary event where, you know, I woke up one morning and I was like, okay, that's it, I go on and do this. It was more of a process of me starting to believe in myself that I can actually embark on this journey and pull it off. And it was an array of different events, different situations in life that have proven to me that I have what it takes to be able to go for this journey. And then step by step, with enough determination and will to actually be focused on this particular target, I began to go through the process and through the motions of basically set myself up to be in a position where I could actually have a successful run at it, or at least I hope I'm going to.
Like when you say the confidence itself, so you're saying like, did you know you're building confidence, or are you just like hugging the experience and doing, you know, every step as best as you could? Like, was it a strategy or was it a, you know, hindsight?
So it's a combination. And you know what? I think that early on in the journey, and I think that's a mistake that many founders do early, we try to find validation from external sources. So we meet with like second and third and fourth time founders, and we talk to them and we share our experience with them, and we try to get this feedback from them on, yeah, you're awesome, you're smart, you're cool, you're this and that. And like, eventually what happens if you trust this external validation too much is whenever some negative signal comes in, it shakes you. And so what happened for me personally is that over time, I began to trust more of my internal compass. And I just believed in my ability to be able to deal with whatever this journey might throw at me, especially because there's literally zero way to predict what the hell this journey throws at you. Like no BS here. In my wildest imagination, could I not have imagined how this will actually work out? And I have zero clarity despite all of my strategies and plans and whatever game plan I have. You know, it's like this Mike Tyson line when everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face. And when you run a startup, you get punched in the face on an hourly basis, not even on a daily basis. So my point is eventually you need to just really, really, really believe in yourself, not in the cliche way, but more in like a deep way of just knowing that whatever happens, you'll have what it takes to power through this.
That is fascinating. And it makes me think of several things. One, I'm curious, you said it was a series of events, and I'm sure that many listeners are also asking themselves, do I have what it takes? And how do I know it's time to take the step? So I want to ask you about the KPIs, because it seems like even if it wasn't, if you were fully aware, that's what you were doing, but you were measuring this in some sense, and you reached a point where you said, okay, I have what it takes. So I'm wondering what that was. And then, yeah, we can save that for later, but it's also a discussion about the balance between actually seeking advice and listening and knowing when what to choose out of the advice, because it can be very intimidating to speak with third and fourth time founders. You know, there's that sentence of, you know, I don't want to take out all your motivation, but so that's also an interesting discussion of how to find the royal way forward in that sense. But let's start with those KPIs.
Sure. So it's interesting you say that, and you use the word KPIs, and like, what was I looking for to know that I'm ready? Yeah. I had a conversation with a close friend of mine who exited a couple of years ago. He had a fantastic exit, and he was a great entrepreneur. And when I asked him, like, how do you know when you're ready? He told me, and I translate from Hebrew, so it will be a bit broken, but he basically told me, you're not a fruit, and you will not know when you ripen. So,
you're actually ideally an avocado.
Yeah, exactly. So the point is, more often than not, there will not be a metric that once you hit it, you know that you're there and you can start doing this journey. And if you don't hit it, you won't be able to. It's more of a story of, do I have the internal conviction that even if I'm not ready, I will be able to actually go through this process? And actually, in my personal journey, when I look through every single step in my career and even in my life in general, whenever I took a leap of faith and I threw myself into deep water, these were the times where I had the biggest growth spurts in my career, the biggest lessons that I learned, the times where I usually flourished the most. It's when I felt that my back is against the wall and I'm in deep water and the only thing I have to do is to paddle the shit out of it or just fall apart. That's usually when I really was able to find this inner something within me that has proven to myself that I am capable of flourishing in this type of situations. And especially in an entrepreneurial journey where every single day there's so many unknowns, and there's so many unpredictables, and there's so many intangible things that you have to deal with, it's that much of an asset.
We're excited to be collaborating with the Israeli website CTech, owned by Kalkalist, Israel's leading business newspaper. CTech is the gateway of the Israeli high tech to the tech world and vice versa. If you're not already a regular reader, we strongly recommend that you check out kalkalistech.com, kalkalistech.com, to stay up to date on all high impact stories from the Israeli tech scene.
Yossi, how do you feel about this sentence that I have? It says, when you have a fallback, you always fall back. It's easier to be forced to be brave than to be brave itself.
Absolutely. It's always easier to be forced to be brave than to be brave by yourself. And I think that actually, if you can think about it, it's a pretty good mechanism. Like if you can do this in a controlled manner, and actually it's something I like to talk about with my co-founder and with friends, I like to call this controlled chaos. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you're able to introduce chaos in a controlled manner in your life, it teaches you on a lot more usually than getting into these well-defined, well-confined, you know, vanilla situations where everything is under your control. Because like, obviously all of us are a bit of a control freak inside, and all of us want to have our little safe, so a soft, cozy space. And life doesn't work like it. Like life constantly just throws curveballs at you. So I think that controlled chaos is something that I definitely try to live by. And if anything, the KPI that I looked for is that when I was able to deal with controlled chaos over enough time with good success, that's when I knew personally that I'll probably be able to deal with any journey I'll be part of.
But how do you control chaos?
Well, that comes back to what I said earlier, which is, I mean, I try to view myself as this set of skills, right, that I bring to the table, at least professionally, right? Obviously, I'm a human being and I have emotions and everything, but professionally, I have skills, right? And so I try to kind of understand whether or not I'm more of a Swiss knife or I'm more of like a scalpel. And I think that because I gave my personal focus and attention and trying to become a Swiss knife more than the scalpel, that really helped me get the confidence of knowing that no matter what situation I found myself in, I'll be able to pull it off. I'll be able to get out of it. Like, honestly, just throw me in the Bronx with no cash and no clothes. I'll work it out.
That's really fascinating. You know, it said, I think research shows that uncertainty is one of the biggest fears for us as human beings. Like, we always seek certainty for that reason. Like, the business model of the news is so powerful. Because we try to at least get ourselves an illusion of certainty. So when we throw ourselves into these messy waters and this and into chaos, then we go against that. And it also reminds me what you were saying about control chaos. I used to do martial arts I used to practice for several years, and I always felt like, in a sense, my core motivation was the way that it felt like a lab for life, and sensing all these struggles and being able to learn how to control and navigate that. And there's even in ninjutsu, which was it's a Japanese martial art that I practiced for a while, for the blue belt, the test that you have to do, you have to tap into your inner dragon. Like the test is basically to try to almost break you, and you need to, when you have like you're completely powerless now and you're still getting beat up, and you have to find the dragon inside and just find out of that low place a way to you know, just go run forward and do what you need to do. And that feels like an analogy to sort of what you ended up doing. But within that, I do believe that you had indications along the way. I don't believe it. You said it. Like you were saying, I had indications that made me understand that it's time. So it wasn't completely just going wild and into chaos and seeing what happens. So I'm sure I'm not even going there with respect to the business, because it's only logical that you saw enough business indications to know that it's worth exploring. And that was the trigger. But beyond it, on a mental note and on a personal note, do you remember several moments or one specific moment when you felt like, okay, I think I've got this. I'm going to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, I wanted to mention that I could totally relate to the martial arts point. I also practiced martial arts in the past. So I can like remember myself going through these situations. And
maybe that's not a coincidence.
It's not coincidental at all. I think that like my entire life was just an array of different chaotic situations that I had to go through. And as I said, I think that the startup is a culmination of a lifetime. It's not like a singular event that is unrelated to everything I've done in the past. I was born into a family of immigrants from the Soviet Union. I was dead broke for the vast majority of my early life. I had to hustle and work my ass off for every single penny I had. I did not serve in the right military units, so I had to actually do the long route of climbing up the ladder in the cyberspace. And all of these different events had some lessons to come with them, and obviously also had a lot of chaos incorporated into them and a lot of hardship. And you know, eventually the difficult times make you a lot stronger than having it easy for you in your life. So, but to your point and to what you asked as far as like different events where I felt that it made me feel ready. I think that obviously you always do the comparing game, even if you don't want to. Like you look around and you look at all your peers, then you look at friends who have started their own startups, and you used to work with them in the past. So obviously your initial reaction is, well, if I worked side to side with them and they embarked on this journey, like what did they have that I lack? Right? It's a very obvious thing that you kind of tell yourself internally, but. I think that aside from like obviously comparing yourself to the environment, there's always some objective things that you can also tell yourself. For example, in order to be a startup founder, you obviously need to have a good understanding of the industry you want to operate in. At some point in time, I got to a point where I don't want to toot my horn and say that I was like a world-class expert or whatever, but I could really carry a conversation with anyone, be it the most technical leader or the most strategic thinker out there, and I could have equally interesting and deep conversations, and I could speak about every single aspect of cybersecurity there is. And I think that knowing that I had this deep understanding and expertise in the market gave me confidence that I probably know the market and the tech good enough to identify opportunities within it. And then when over time I saw that I'm able to predict trends and to like have these moments when, oh yeah, I thought about this idea, it's cool that now it's in the market, like that also gave me some confidence to know that, okay, cool, I can actually identify opportunities for businesses that actually come to fruition. And then from a timing perspective, again, it was a point in time when I felt I had enough wins under my belt. And of course, when you go towards an entrepreneurial journey and you want to fundraise, you gotta have an impressive background, right? You need to have some success stories behind you. Even if you're smart and talented, if you did not prove yourself in the field, it doesn't mean anything. And so one thing that was personally important for me is to make sure that I had enough success stories under my belt, success stories as far as team building goes, success stories as far as being able to achieve operational excellence, even develop tech on my own. And despite me not having a startup before that, I definitely did not go into this journey as a first timer of building a security solution or doing something. So I think that the combination of all of these, plus having this internal conviction and inside of me that this is the right time for me to give it a shot, I think all of these together definitely gave me the momentum I needed.
And how do you strike that balance that we touched upon before of seeking advice, but also knowing what not to take and knowing what shouldn't discourage you? Like, how do you even optimize that radar of yours and strike a balance? And also, you know, you don't want to be arrogant and you don't want to think, yeah, I'm going to reinvent the wheel and I know better than everybody and I'm not going to listen. But how do you even manage that?
First of all, it's a personal balance. And for some people, it will be more biased towards giving it weight because that's the way you generate internal confidence. For me, it was the other way around. I, as I told you, initially, I began by trusting external validation. And at some point, I realized that it was too toxic for me to rely on. And I actually had a few conversations where people really close to me told me that I don't think you can pull it off. Like, honestly, I don't think you can go on this journey, and maybe you need to, think of adding another co-founder or maybe find a better timing and grow a little bit more professionally. And to tell you that I just shaked it off as if it was nothing, it definitely impacted me. But what I did internally is to basically remind myself that, again, if this is something I want to do now, and if this is something that I dreamt about all my life, similar to what I did at every single point in time in my career where I dove into deep waters, I'll find this internal strength in me to work it out. And even if I don't have the answers right now, I believe in my ability to finding these answers as I move along. And so whoever was a naysayer, so to speak, and did not believe in me, I just took it as fuel. I was like, I'm going to show you that you're wrong.
But usually what happens is we all feel like we're a fraud. Okay, that's the basic of humanity. So first of all, we're, you know, fake it till you make it is a basic human resource. Okay, it's not really someone lying because we're all born as a baby, you know, with a diaper, and then something happens. So what was the point in life where you had that core belief, you know, there's like, I'll do it anyways, I'm courageous. And then there's like, okay, I have an X factor. I'm the shit. I know I can do this. I believe in myself. There's a chance it will work, but I literally know that there's a better chance that it will succeed than it won't because I believe in myself. Is there a point that you remember that there was a change?
I think that there was a period in my life when a major change happened. It was definitely like, like in a video game when you accumulate coins, yeah, or points.
That's exactly how I imagine it as well.
Like, honestly, I gamify everything in my life. But to your point, it's funny you say that. Okay, so there was a point in my career when I went to work for this company called Signia, and Signia is like one of the most legendary places in the Israeli cybersecurity industry. There's like about 20, 25 startups that have spun up from people who used to work over there. So it's like,
was that true when you joined, or was that something that evolved as you were there?
That was true, but to a lesser extent. The founders of Signia went on to start additional startups, and a few of the core team did at that time as well. But even then, Signia was legendary because it was this kind of place where the top guys from Unit 80-100 would go to after they finished their service. It was like this first hop after. And so for me to first of all, find myself there was a really triggering moment for my personal imposter syndrome, because I felt like an outsider. I felt like I did not belong there. Like, holy shit, all of those super smart, talented guys that did this crazy stuff during their military days. And here I am, like, I'm just some schmuck of the street. And like, I did not feel like I belonged there. And I think that because I had to work so hard to catch up to these guys. And eventually I became the top consultant for the firm and had great success with them during my time. Going through this journey of, you know, there was like a real point when somebody just came up to me, like one of the guys that I worked with on one of the customers. And he told me like, dude, you're so fast. Like I could never pull off what you just did with this customer. And to me, it felt like second nature. Like I did not do anything special. I was just being myself. And when he told me that in the back of my head, when you peel off all these imposter syndrome layers, like a voice told me, oh my God, maybe I do have the shit.
By the way, external feedback, again, that balance.
Yeah, exactly. Like there was some external feedback.
Which is so natural.
Yeah, it felt very natural. So it's not like this voice did not exist. I think that inside all of us, there's these two voices that talk to each other constantly, and there's tension between them. And one constantly says, you don't have what it takes, you're an imposter, blah, blah, blah. And the second one definitely says, but wait a second, I know what I'm doing. Like, I've done this in the past. I was able to pull shit off. And I think that once I went through enough of these situations and that particular company, because it's a consulting gig, like every other month you'll be flown to some other part of the globe, another organization, another customer, like the differentiation between the different situations was so vast that eventually you just come to realize, oh my God, okay, I've been around the globe. I saw every single organization you can see, from Fortune 50 companies to cyber startups to anything in between and the biggest manufacturing beasts in the world. And I was able to give them value across the board every single time. And I think that for me personally, that was a point when I told myself, okay, if I'm able to go for this and have success in this journey, especially if I'm doing this shoulder to shoulder with the top guys in the industry and those that eventually you see going out there and starting their own startups, then yeah, I definitely have what it takes.
I think that's the definition of confidence also, that you accumulate enough experience that you feel that you can lean on yourself. And maybe that fear of external feedback is because, you know, it can be so empowering to get the positive feedback. But then if you take it, if you double down only on that and you don't have your inner explanation of why you're good enough, then when somebody tells you that you're not good enough, it's so fragile. So I suppose the combination of being able to trust yourself and to know and to take each feedback subjectively and ask yourself if you should take it in, whether it's good or bad, but you know, to be able to actually also take in the good, because you don't want to shut that off. And then also just in general, sometimes to just remind ourselves that people are always projecting their own story. So even if it's a fourth time founder who's telling you that, you know, you don't stand a chance, then A, maybe a question that's worth asking is, did I even ask for feedback, or did they just voice it? And I think that could be a good filter, because if somebody tells you their opinion without being asked, then that would, I would say that's an internal alert to think, wait, is that feedback truly valid? And then if you do ask and they give it to you, then I would still ask myself, what is their story and how is this opinion aligned with what I know about what they've achieved? You know, just to be critical about everything.
I totally agree. And you also said something interesting, which is that experience helps you generate confidence. And I think that's exactly the difference between being arrogant and being confident. It's having the experience, because the more you accumulate, the more experiences you accumulate, that really gives you the knowledge that, okay, I don't just think I can do it, I can actually do the thing.
But so, there's also a balance here, because I think it was Mike Tyson, speaking of, but I'm not sure it was him, that said, I'm number one, they just don't know it yet. So sometimes you also have to believe in yourself when nobody else does. And in an entrepreneurial journey, it could be even more challenging, because, you know, we talk about experience, but, you know, first-time entrepreneur has zero experience in running a startup. So there's a lot of emotional complexity to walk around with.
Tell me about it. And actually, especially in the cyber industry today, if you think about it, there's the saturation of like second, third, fourth time entrepreneurs that now go on runs because they sold their companies a few years ago and now their retention period's end. And all of a sudden, when you're a first time entrepreneur and you find yourself in a field that's saturated with all of these veterans, you feel even more this pressure of, you know, do I actually know what I'm doing? Am I actually doing the right things at any point in time? And these guys have playbooks that they just, you know, repeat to some extent. And I think that for me personally, that comes back to also making sure that I have good advisors around me and people who I trust and I can take advice from, because as I said, like, you will never have all the answers and you will never have an indication that this is what you need to do tomorrow and that will generate success. Like, there's no axioms in this space. And so for me personally, it was really about making sure that whatever decision I take in an informed manner. I never take an important decision without consulting with a few people that I really, really, really trust. And even still, at the end of the day, I have to take the decision.
Yeah, but and so this is interesting. Okay, so you talk about consultants. You had, so in this podcast, you already twice talked about consultants. Once, you said about a lot of people that you consulted with and said, this is never going to go. This is horrible. You should change. You should get another partner. This is like one type of consultant. And then we have a second type where obviously they were wrong. At least I'm, you know, more wrong than right in statistically. And then we say, but I'm still going to consultants. Okay. And I have to get advice, which panned out. I'm not saying that there are nuggets, but how do you pan out what's a good advice and bad advice? Because everybody has a, you know, especially in the Israeli market, everybody has, you know, an opinion. Everybody has an opinion. You know, there's this Japanese guy that I did business with that said this metaphor. He said, listen, and if I had a rowing team, then in Japan, there's one guy saying, row the boat. There's three paddling. And in Israel, there's three guys saying rowing and one actually that paddles. So how do you define a good consultant here?
So I think that it's a combination of a few things, and it really depends on what sort of advisor you're looking for. For me personally, I have different advisors for different challenges I'm dealing with. For example, if I'm looking to take a strategic decision or I need help in areas where I lack experience, for example, as a CEO, then I usually take the advice of CEOs that I really admire. And I was lucky enough to have some really successful CEOs in my network who are friends of mine and are willing to actually mentor me and coach me. And they do this because they have been in this position before that themselves. And it's kind of, you know, passing the torch kind of thing to some extent. And I think that the reason I'm able to trust their advice, and of course, advice has two parts always. It has the database, the data-based part of it, or the evidence-based part of it. And then there's the subjective element, which you can never prove or deny. And then with the subjective element, what usually helps me deal with is one, the fact that every single advisor I have is a person who made more mistakes than right decisions, because if anything, the lessons reside with mistakes. And at the same time, it's important for me to also know that those guys had great success. Because then they also know, okay, here's the mistakes, but here's the thing that actually worked for me, and here's the evidence that those things actually have worked for me. Now, it doesn't mean that it can 100% apply to me, but it's definitely an indicator of something positive that can be done. So I think that once I have a few signals of this sort and I get a few pieces of advice, I try to, you know, pragmatically look at them and compare it to my inner compass and my inner sense of what I thought was a good decision and how it applies to my own world. And that's how I personally drive myself to a decision.
And who's your co-founder?
So my co-founder is Jonathan Rosenberg. He's one of the best people I actually get to know in my life. And he used to work with me back in my Signia days. Yeah, he was coaching me through my very first customer engagement in Signia. And I found myself thrown into it about 3 weeks into my time there. Still didn't rub off the milk off my lips. So I was really lucky to have someone like him kind of, you know, help me navigate the situation. And wow, he's just an awesome dude.
How beautiful to hear co-founders speak of each other that way, or at least that you think.
Do they have a choice? I think it would be obviously on air to say he's a douchebag. That wouldn't be an option. Not that I'm...
No, but we both know that you speak to founders and they don't always gush. No.
Sure, he's a great guy. I'm just saying, you know, it's not an option. It's, you know, it's on air.
To tell you that there's no days when I wake up and I want to choke him, it will be a lie. But I think that's the beauty of it. You don't want to have a co-founder who is... not just complicit, but also like a replica of yourself. You want someone who completes you and who balances you out, because all of us have strengths and weaknesses. I'm a very outspoken person. I can definitely fill the room. And at the same time, I can be tactless. And at the same time, Jonathan is a lot more reserved than I am. He has this finesse about him. Like when you meet him, you just know. So that's like a balancing act that we have. And I think that in the most beautiful teams that I had the chance to witness in my life with founders, they had this almost dance that they had going on, where all of them just balance each other out. And they have this almost silent understanding when they can just look at each other and they just know. And I think that I was lucky enough to have this with Jonathan. And I actually went through a lot of founder dating before that and did not have that. So, you know, it took a lot of, you know, rejection and a lot of failures before you actually knew that what you have is real and good.
How long have you been working together?
Wow. So we worked for like 2 years back in our Signia days. And now in this journey, it's been, wow, almost a year now.
Okay. I hope for your sake that you keep talking about him that way 5 years down the road.
Oh, you bet. You bet. I'm certain that'll be the case.
Yeah. Fingers crossed for you. And yeah, it is. It's a relationship to invest in 100%.
Like, honestly, I don't think people talk about it enough, but like the relationship you have with your co-founder is no different than any other relationship you have in your life. If anything, it's probably the closest thing you'll have to the relationship you have in your personal life with your man, woman, whoever you are with. And so with me, it was about understanding that, yes, obviously we have our professional relationship, but there's also a personal relationship that you need to manage. And one thing that we were lucky enough to emphasize when we embarked on this journey was really spending enough time together outside of the professional sphere and outside of like the talks about the startup and our aspirations and whatnot. And I think that once we connected as human beings and we began maintaining this relationship that we have on a personal level in a healthy fashion, that really benefited our professional life much more than us, you know, going through some process that we had during this journey.
So it's a little bit on that note, but it's, you know, there's something that I want to ask. In the last while, I've been interviewing some people, and I want to hear the thoughts on that. So when you have a co-founder, okay, and or you know, a few co-founders, whatever it is, one of the things is there's sort of like, I call it the entrepreneur tragedy, meaning you have this idea, okay, and the first day it's 100% your idea. It's not a real strategy, right? It's a metaphor. And then what you have to do to succeed in that idea, you actually have to give up things to make it work. So you have, it's yours and you're giving it up, okay, whatever it is, okay, giving parts of it, okay. And then at the end of the day, it's kind of like a golden jail cell, because what happens is now there's a point where, let's say, one of the challenges, and we'll go for this as an example, is I need to get, as a co-founder, I need to get my salary, right? At the end of the day, but there's no money in the company and tomorrow it may dissolve. And then there's this balance that what do I give up as co-founders? Still have that relationship. Maybe one's working more, maybe one's not, okay? And then you have to balance it up, because one sense you understand that if you're not calm enough and you have that salary, you can't focus on your job. Okay, again, I'm right. You talked about stealth mode right now. So, in that sense, whoever wants it to succeed the most, the dreamer, is the one usually giving it up the most, which is the opposite from, you know, intuitional knowledge. So, my question is this: how do you still respect yourself as an entrepreneur dreamer and get what you need to succeed but also give it enough fuel to make it happen.
Wow, it's a lot to unpack. So let me take a jab at it. I think that there's different sides to it. You said fuel. Fuel, yep. From my perspective, is not just financial fuel. Obviously, you need to pay the bills, you need to keep the lights on, you need to have food on the table. But aside from those things, and by the way, if you live by the basics, you really don't need too much to be able to close the month. Like if you are able to actually, you know, tighten up the bills and everything, you can live a modest life and that'll be fine. But for me, fuel is not just money. Fuel is also mental fuel. Fuel is feeling energized. Fuel is being able to wake up in the morning and have enough energy to deal with whatever faces me in the next day. Fuel is me being able to maintain the relationships and friendships that I have in my life. I think that one of the biggest things that gave me fuel in this journey is the friends around me and my surroundings and my environment and my family and my girlfriend, of course. And I think that combination of all of these together, the support system that you build around yourself as a founder. And by the way, I think that this is a collective effort. You said that in this journey, you give away control. I think that honestly, I never had control because it was never only my baby. Like for me to be able to embark on this journey, I needed this insane support system of all of these people in my life, holding me like Titan is holding the world in order to make sure that I don't fall apart, because Only then was I able to actually have the energy and the ability to actually do this marathon. And it is a marathon. It's not like a sprint where you just, you know, you give everything and you lie on the fence and that's it. You need to have the resilience and the grit and the ability to do this day in and day out for multiple years. And for some entrepreneurs, actually, for some of my closest friends, it's now a journey that's longer than 10 years. Oh my God. Can you imagine being 10 years in the situation of uncertainty? And like the only way you can sustain that is if you have this net of support around you. And I think that the financial aspect is very much minor to it. And again, for me personally, it was quite easy. I just saved as much as I could and lived off of savings. Like, okay, that's what you
I know. So I understand that, but let's talk. Like frankly, I'll say this: you're very lucky. So if a business was a building, then we have four pillars. Okay, if you have four people in the company that are wanted enough and with enough, they make it their own to hold up the building, you're the luckiest man in the world. That's a lot. Okay, again, I'm not saying they don't care, but I'm saying they literally take one for the team, holding up the building. They care as much as you care. That's an amazing four, okay? If you have two, okay, you're still really, really good. Okay, one and a half, I'd say would be the average, okay? Just, you know, like it's ongoing, but there's always the one person, at least two usually, okay? But having more than that, that's you know, it's a challenge. So you know, you always care a little bit more. You know, they also say in relationships, you made a metaphor of relationships. So in every relationship, you know, of course in divorce, it's 50-50, but it's never 50-50 really. Like there's always a one more side than the other. A little more, whatever, but there always is, right?
Sure. So I think that, again, it comes down to maybe also not having ego in this journey. You said like everything is not 50-50. I think that obviously everything is not 50-50 in life, but it's not 50-50 from an objective perspective. It should be 50-50 from the perspective that as long as everybody brings in 100% of himself and you can identify that the other side is giving everything that he can bring to the table, that's good enough for me. And as long as I can get that from every single person in my journey, no matter if it's my co-founder, my employees, my partners, my investors, no matter who it is, if I can see that, I'm satisfied. I will never be triggered by it.
Love it.
Me too. Yossi, what would you say your superpower is?
Oh, gosh. I don't have any of it. No, I mean,
you had to be ready for that question, man. You had to be ready for that.
I think that my superpower personally is adaptability. I always like to tell people that I'm like a gecko. And no matter what situation I find myself in, I will always be able to, you know, work myself out of it in the best way possible. And I think was like my
agility also. You're agile.
Yeah. Agility, pliability, flexibility, whatever you want to call it. But it's, I like to view myself like a super putty, in Hebrew, you have this malgamish. So like that's how I view myself. And I think that was the biggest asset in my career. Like one of my former bosses said that I'm like a jack of all trades and master of some, and I just love this statement. And I always try to remain that as a person. And that's why I always try to also keep my hobbies alive, even in this journey. Like I cook and I collect wine and I do rock climbing and I used to be a competitive athlete back in the day and then was weightlifting and whatnot. And I travel a lot and I do off-roading. So that's like all over the place. And I think that being able to like maintain my core as a person at the same time, being able to maintain this diversity about myself, that really became my real superpower and gave me the ability to thrive in situations.
What about your kryptonite?
I think my kryptonite is focus. It's focus.
Getting bored.
I think that not even getting bored. I think that getting bored is a byproduct of it. But it's more about like whenever I'm focused on something, it's like I'm Cyclops, right? Whenever I'm able to put on the Cyclops glasses and they focus,
it's great. When you take them off.
Exactly. When I take them off, I can just track everything around me. So for me, the biggest challenge is maintaining focus. And I think that's the biggest challenge for entrepreneurs in general. It's making sure that your attention span is being invested in the most important things, because especially early on, everything is important. Everything is burning. The world is crashing around you. It's a fight for survival. So it's a learning experience for me. It's definitely something I'm actively working on, but that's definitely my kryptonite, I think.
And what's amazing is, now, if you notice again, the superpower, agility, adaptability, and the weakness is focus, because he has to adapt all the time. It's always the superpower is always the weakness.
Always.
Everybody we interview, we find out that superpowers are the weakness and vice versa. It's,
yeah, every time. Every time. Yossi, thank you so much for doing this. It was really interesting to listen to you. I think you provided some great nuggets, and I love your authenticity.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. I love having these conversations. Thank you for having me.
And a lot of luck with this.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. Fingers crossed. Hopefully soon you'll hear some amazing news.
That's all for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please consider subscribing to our podcast so you never miss an episode. Also, if you have a moment, we would really appreciate it if you could rate and review our podcast on the platform you're listening to. This will help others find our show. And as always, if you know anyone who you think would enjoy our podcast, please share it with them. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back as usual on the 1st of the month.
Real. Live.
Superpowers.
Up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology.
Real. Live.
Superpowers.